Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Wisconsin Primary Fat Tuesday edition. I feel a little fat stuffed into this sport coat, kind of like a stepdad.
A sausage?
Angus Young? No, man, I bought this sport coat. It was bought at current weight-ish. I'm sure I weighed about the same when I bought this thing. I look good in this. You were making fun of me. I have to wear a suit coat. And a hat. If I don't wear my Badger hat, Don makes fun of my somewhat bald head.
Somewhat, yes. It's your calling card, man. And you do look a little bit like Angus Young. I mean, I like that, man. There's a little schoolboy look with the tie and the hat. Yeah, man.
The dimples mean trouble, baby. You can get into some trouble with us this hour if you want to. 844-967-2789. Dom! You ended the last hour, though, making a big, overblown allegation against my girl, three-toed Marjorie Taylor Greene, that she wanted to start a national civil war, Dom. And I understand that may not at all be true, she says.
That's just a divorce. Maybe a trial separation.
A divorce, Dom. Do you see the newest?
There's lots of newest, so be specific.
How about the one over at Raw Story? Because you know what I'm like going to, baby. We got a quick commercial break. I'm going to Raw Story. Marjorie Taylor Greene details national divorce, including rules for sex toys. You know what's really caught my attention, man? It's the happier happy hour.
Maybe if they used some sex toys, they wouldn't be talking about divorce. You know what I'm saying?
Rep. Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican from Georgia, Nam.
Really?
Explained in detail on Tuesday how her version for a national divorce would work. She wants a divorce, Dom. On Monday, Greene repeated calls for a national divorce and raised concerns that she wanted a new civil war. But on Tuesday, the lawmaker insisted she was not calling for violence. I quote Marjorie Taylor Greene, "While the left and the right should consider a national divorce not a civil war, but a legal agreement to separate our ideological and political disagreements by states while maintaining our legal union." Sort of a trial separation, if you will.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not sleeping on the couch, man.
She wrote on Twitter, "Tragically, I think we, the left and the right, have reached irreconcilable differences." That's what they used in her divorce proceedings, I suspect, Dom. And speaking for conservatives, Greene said she was absolutely disgusted and fed up with the left cramming, enforcing their ways on us and our children with no respect for our religion, faith, traditional values, and economic and government policy beliefs. That's a mouthful.
That certainly is.
Dom, in a series of tweets, she described the benefits of so-called national divorce. Most federal government agencies would be eliminated in the scenario, Greene argued. A national divorce would require a much smaller federal government with much more power given to the states. Hence, we would solve our debt and spending problems immediately.
Oh, really? Well, I mean, usually when there's a divorce, you know, you split the assets and you split the liabilities. So given, you know, the GDP and economic impact of, red states versus blue states, I think it'd be a pretty big haul for them.
You know what I'd like to get to in a minute, Dom? If you live down south in a red state, you got worse credit scores, probably, across the board. And I mean no offense to our listeners in the Sun Belt, but you got some bad credit. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Dom, let's come back to this piece of the roster. You want to clean up this mess. Green predicted red states would strip rights from transgender people. I'm going to do the Marjorie Taylor Greene again. Of course, interstate trade, travel, and state relations would continue, she continued. However, in red states, they could have different rules about store product placement on national store shelves. In red states, I highly doubt Walmart could place sex toys next to the children's toothbrushes. Well, let me ask you, Marjorie, have your kids ever gone out and shopped for their own toothbrushes? I mean, seriously, are the kids walking up and down the aisles of Walmart looking for their own toothbrushes? And in blue states, they would immediately disarm their citizens, of course, because those bad guns get up and kill people by themselves all the time. I'd be okay with the blue states being able to regulate the gun laws, Dom. Green remarked, in a national divorce, the left could achieve their dreams of total and complete lawlessness. Well, there's my utopia, Dom. I
mean, come on, man.
That's not your utopia? You know, I found an interesting article. I mentioned this one to you. And I read beyond the headlines. I dug deep in this article, Dom. And I'll bring you to the conclusion because it's a little bit of a longer read, an analysis by Andrew Van Dam at the Washington Post. And the name of this article, Dom, why does the South have such ugly credit scores? Why do people down South literally have crappy credit? And they go through different zip codes, county by county across the United States, and factor the average credit score county by county. Now, first glance, Wisconsin looks pretty clean. Look like good, upstanding, you know, citizens. We pay our bills here for the most part. But there are some, let's call it rural counties, where credit scores aren't quite as strong. But then you go down to, like, the Sun Belt, Dom. Georgia, where Marjorie Taylor Greene's from. South Carolina, North Carolina. And Alabama and Mississippi, they're entirely blue, basically. Louisiana, entirely blue. Arkansas, Arkansas if you prefer. Oklahoma, Texas, Arizona, Nevada, Dom, Colorado. Well, Colorado's doing okay, but the rest of them, that Sun Belt, man, they got some deadbeat credit scores. And you think to yourself, well, you must mean because there's more poverty down south and, you know, poor people have worse credit typically. Well, perhaps. But not entirely. Let me read a little of this one for you, Dom. Today, we look at a big, fat map of credit scores reproduced from a recent economics paper. I look so you don't have to. And while the map suggests any number of tantalizing questions, we are most intrigued by the big band of credit score calamity that stretches across the American South. Think Marjorie Taylor Greene's district and, you know, the South. Almost every corner of America's most populous region, every race, every income bracket. You hear that, Don? It just ain't poor people.
Mm-hmm.
Every income bracket appears to have low credit scores. But why? With precious few exceptions, it looks to be a neatly regional phenomenon. We spent hundreds of hours scrapping Airbnb listings to determine the true extent of the American South. But we could have saved a lot of time if we just drawn a line around the contiguous places with low credit scores. Damn, that hurts a little. And what do low credit scores mean? They mean people are paying higher premiums for the right to borrow money, right?
Yeah, everything you got to pay higher rates if you have low score. Yes, you are more of a risky lend if you have poor credit scores.
Well, the writer of this column points that out. The region's poor credit scores mean Southerners are paying more to borrow money, assuming they can qualify for loans at all. That sets them back in everything from car and home purchases to credit card rewards. Yes, even credit card rewards. I like my credit card rewards, Dom. Don't utilize them much, but I like them. The researchers behind the map, Sumit Agrawal and the National University of Singapore, and Andrea Presbyterio of the International Monetary Fund, and there's others, but I'm not going to keep reading names, examined data from 238 million credit cards and found that rewards programs such as American Express Gold effectively siphoned billions of dollars a year from lower income counties, many of them in the South, and transfer the cash to well-heeled enclaves loaded with professionals who tend to take advantage of such programs. But Tom, why? Why? And they thought maybe it was even racism. I'm going to jump forward in this column. But when we ran the numbers, the blackest parts of the South had roughly the same credit scores as the least black areas. And their scores were far lower than places with similar black populations outside the South. So while race may play a role, it's probably not the defining factor. So that ain't it either, Dom. So you gotta keep going and going and going, and eventually they tell you why. It's medical debt. It's medical debt. People down South are more likely to sustain medical debt. Medical debt may not be the only force behind the South's credit struggles, but it appears to be a key contributor. So where did it all come from, and why is it concentrated in the South? Now, Dom, I would point out, they put up a map here of the states that failed to expand Medicaid. And we talked about those states in the Southeast, North Carolina, Tennessee, Alabama, Florida, South Carolina, Georgia, all those states down there, they failed to expand Medicaid. Oh, yeah, in Texas. Hell no, we're not taking that Obama money, right? And there are a few more Western states thrown in. And then there's one upper Midwestern exception.
Let me guess.
The state of Wisconsin has failed to expand Medicaid. Failed to expand Medicaid. So when I look at the lawmakers of the state of Wisconsin, I think this is the most egregious thing they could possibly do. Not only are they saddling the people of the state of Wisconsin with greater medical debt, because if you don't expand Medicaid, poor people, when they get medical bills, they get sent the collections. They ding their credit. And now they're paying for everything to check cashing because they can't even open bank accounts. Everything becomes more expensive. Life becomes harder when you're broke.
It's expensive to be poor.
Very. But it's specific policies of Republicans. I mean, these are policies of choice. The failure to expand Medicaid, these are entirely red-run states. Scott Walker, remember that guy? The former governor of the state of Wisconsin hated taking the Obama money, had his unique proposition. In Wisconsin, not awash in the medical debt that some places are, but really this divergence in credit score, big part of it happened when the South failed to expand Medicaid. It's coming for us, Wisconsin. More devils.
Occupy didn't start on Wall Street. It started on our street. The Devil's Advocates.
Money. And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Join us on the phones at 844-967-2789.
Dom, I'm not going to make my way through the entirety of this Washington Post column that discusses why do Southern states across the board, regardless of race, regardless of income level, they have worse credit scores. And the conclusion arrived at by this analysis is effectively, it's the failure to expand Medicaid. And I'm going to read just two more paragraphs, maybe three. Of the 11 states that have yet to expand Medicaid, I remind you, that includes Wisconsin. Eight sit in the deep South, according to KFF, a San Francisco health policy nonprofit. Southerners were more likely to be behind on medical debt even before the ACA, but after the reluctance among the region's mostly Republican governors to participate in the Medicaid expansion, it has increased the gaps between the South and the rest of the country. Talking about credit score gaps, medical debt gaps, and states that immediately expanded Medicaid. Medical debt was slashed nearly in half between 2013 and 2020.
Wow.
In states that expanded Medicaid, medical debt fell in half. In states that didn't expand Medicaid, medical debt fell just 10%. And the JAMA team found that in low-income communities in those states, medical debt levels actually rose. That's a shocker, isn't it, Dom? One more paragraph here. Expanding Medicaid could help a lot, but these states just don't do it. And they don't realize how much of an impact that actually has on people's lives and their financial well-being, even access to employment. If you have a bad credit history, employers might deny you work, you know. They can deny you work. And here's what I would say. Here in the state of Wisconsin, it happens that we don't have Medicaid expansion. And it's not just Scott Walker anymore, right? Because Scott Walker is gone. He's a bygone era. But all the bad governance, the baking in the cake of the gerrymandered maps, well, that has preserved. And we have a two-thirds electoral majority of Republicans, despite the fact they seldom ever win a statewide election. So when we talk about the debt and the bad credit and the bad policies, these are being done to the people by Republican governance. There is a direct line, a correspondence between failure to expand Medicaid in personal debt, in worsened credit ratings, in higher payments on every other aspect of their lives. And the fact that we have gerrymandered the maps, not me and Dom, not Democrats, not here. No, Democrats have done it elsewhere, but not here in the state of Wisconsin. This is purely a Republican malfeasance. They have baked the cake to the point that despite the fact the state of Wisconsin overwhelmingly take the freaking money, it makes financial sense. You guys are the conservatives. The fiscal conservatives would take the money to fund the medical system, to take more Wisconsinites out of debt, to provide them with the basics. So if you want to start your own job, you have the ability to do so. You know, self-employed, hard to do if you're stuck with somebody's health care at a job. But Scott Walker, he didn't care. And Robin Voss, 12 years later, is still sticking it to the people of Wisconsin. And this Republican majority, it starts today. Today is election day. Today is primary day in my state, in the great state of Wisconsin. And if you make the right choice, and at this late hour, I like Everett Mitchell, but the right choice, apparently everyone's lining up behind Janet Protasiewicz. The money lined up behind her. The ads lined up behind her. And I think she'll be the stronger candidate. I think she'll be the first place out of the primary tonight. But if you put Protasiewicz on the courts, she effectively said it is rigged. These maps are rigged. And the fact that we have not done, we are living like we're trapped in a southern state, some pre-Confederacy state here. We're trapped with
Mississippi, baby.
Well, we got abortion laws from 1849 and no willingness to do a damn thing about that from any of these Republican lawmakers. They act like coming halfway, meeting the Dems halfway, meeting women halfway is maybe an exception for rape or incest. And if you want to change that, today is the day. It starts today. You got to vote in the primary. Everett Mitchell, he's a fine candidate. Janet Protasiewicz, she's a damn fine candidate. They're both very good. Choose one. Go vote. Be strategic if you want. Go mess around in the Janelle Branchon race. Hell, that doesn't matter. But the other ones, they matter a lot. And I've been joking, Dom. I've been talking about Dan Kelly because I think he's an unelectable candidate. I think he's already demonstrated that. Despite the fact he was appointed to the court by Scott Walker, couldn't win election, got crushed by 163,000 votes because he is perhaps the worst Supreme Court justice this side of corrupted Gableman. But I would remind you, the recent reporting of Dan Kelly from the testimony of Andrew Hitt, the Republican Party chairman of the state of Wisconsin, said effectively, not only is he a pompous ass, but he was involved in the insurrection. He helped plot the fake fraudulent elector scheme, the criminal, I would assert, elector scheme in the state of Wisconsin. It's time to do something different, Wisconsin. Today's your day. Go vote. I will do so after this fine program. Bonus coverage right here. 844-967-2789. We'll come back. More of your phone calls, Dom's thoughts perhaps as well. I have a few more rants. It's the tie. It's a little tight.
It's a great rant, man. It makes perfect sense. And the Republicans could do something about this, and they're choosing not to. So as such, those of us in the state of Wisconsin, and certainly as evidenced by this article and the study down south, end up paying more for everything because they don't have enough money for frickin' health care.
You know, I even think high earners, you think you got insurance. You know, they send you that letter. Well, I paid my insurance bill. I paid my copay. Oh, one more coming in the mail. Better get that one too. Hate to see them send you to collections and wreck your otherwise good credit that you've worked very hard for and could be wrecked through very little fault of your own. Because nobody wants to get sick or get hit by a bus. I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong, Dom. Don't chase cars. 844-967-2789. Chase. Chasing calls next? Something like that. More Devils.
The Devil's Advocates, the fix for political junkies everywhere.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Fat Tuesday primary happier happy hour rolling through it, Dom, taking your phone calls. And I don't think I did the future civic media coverage any justice. Let me tell you a few of the highlights coming. Hold on. I got one of my kids calling me. You know I do a radio show. Come on. Son number one. He forgets. Dom, here are a couple of the journalists that will be a part of the Cavalcade of Stars. Reed Epstein from the New York Times. Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation blog. A new addition to the team, Jimmy Koska, just joined the civic media team. We welcome him. They've also got Maurice Shepard. I believe he's a political scientist here in Madison. Also, Terry Barr, Melissa Kay, Don Brown. We've got Kristen Bry and Jane Mantineer doing the 7 o'clock hour. Todd Alba and newsman Terry Bell. I mean, hell, that sounds like quite a party, Dom.
That sounds fantastic. Make sure you stay tuned in to this big primary night here in Wisconsin.
We'll take you up to the pregame coverage at 7 with Kristen Bry and Jane Mantineer from Asgos, Wisconsin. And Todd and Terry will start the cavalcade at 8 o'clock when the polls close in the great state of Wisconsin. 844-967-2789. You know, I got a wanker story as well, but first our callers. Who's your Bob? How you, Dad? How you doing?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, boys. How are you?
Good. You know, I always feel like asking you who's your daddy or something like that, but go ahead.
You were discussing the poverty rate in the South.
Yes.
Now, I've lived in the South, lived down there for a long time. One of the major compelling factors in the Southern poverty rate is the fact that them hillbillies down there cannot, a solid 50% of them cannot read at an eighth grade level.
So you think it's a number deficient two. Educational system in part?
Number two, you cannot even attempt to ask them to work on higher math, you know, like adding and subtracting. So they can't read the bill when it comes in. They can't add and subtract out of their checkbook to see if they can afford the bill. And they sure as hell don't know how to write the check.
So, you know, that's it in a nutshell.
Bob, come on, man. I think Bob.
That's a pretty broad brush you're painting with there, Bob.
Bob, I lived in rural North Carolina, and I can tell you the educational system was not as good. And I went down there, and I actually went to the very same school that both my mom and my grandfather had attended, Charles L. Kuhn Central Middle School, or whatever they called it. And that building was old. They didn't have air conditioning in it. It was hard to learn. I mean, they didn't provide the kids with new textbooks. They were old. A lot of them were dated 15, 20 years. These are social studies history textbooks, and they missed some gaps in history, if you know what I'm saying. But Bob, ultimately, I didn't find people to be desperately uneducated. I mean, no worse than we have in Milwaukee or rural Wisconsin or anywhere, man. It's not a Southern problem, not exclusively. If you don't have good...
On contraire, man. On contraire.
What part?
Go ahead. I worked for the state of Florida.
Well, Florida is kind of its own thing down there, but go ahead, Bob.
I had to pass a written test before I could even get to the interview process.
Like a civil service sort of a test, Bob?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
The gentleman sitting next to me couldn't read nor write his own name. So the state of Florida said, that's okay. You can just take the test orally. Well, that's kind of them, I guess. But damn, in real world application, when you had to read instructions or you had to do something on a job where nobody was giving you verbatim orders on what to do, where to go, and when to do it, that man was lost.
Bob, don't mean to cut you short. We got a few others that want to participate. But I will tell you this. Having the benefit of an education from the public schools in Wisconsin, when I was a kid growing up in the 70s and the 80s here, second to none, the education I received. When I went down south, the teachers did not have the same credibility as the teachers I had when I was in elementary school. By fifth or sixth grade, I could tell the difference in the quality of the teachers that were standing before the classrooms. That doesn't mean some weren't good. A lot of them were caring. But they really didn't have the same ability to educate the kids. And what I found they did in the Southern schools is they had gifted and talented programs. And they would literally grab the cream of the crop out of the broader classroom. And then they kind of dumbed down the grader, if you will. Rather than having a smart kid in the back that kind of prods you along or you cheat off his paper or whatever the case may be. You know, they took those kids and they gave them better educational opportunities. And my brother still lives in North Carolina, and my niece went through North Carolina schools. She got a fine education. The universities are great down south, many of them. Duke University, North Carolina, University of North Carolina, where I grew up. That's fine universities. But not everyone is getting that opportunity. You know, some... If you aren't amongst the more gifted, you know, good luck if you struggle in reading as a young student like I did in Wisconsin. I was encouraged along and brought along, thank goodness, because by the time I got down south, if I'd have been the dumb kid, if I'd have been in the Dodo Birds reading class like I was as a young kid here in Wisconsin, I had a visual impairment that wasn't diagnosed till fourth grade. If I'd have been in the schools down south, Hoosier Bob, what you're telling me is I could have ended up never reading, never participating in a broader society, at least economically. But I don't think the schools are appreciably worse overall when you look at the ultimate outcomes. A lot of schools underperforming all across the nation, and it's not the lack of teacher dedication.
844-967-2789. Let's keep going on the phone.
Feeling kind of ranty today. Sorry,
that's all right, man. I appreciate that, Crudy. Dan from Madison, you're up. Welcome. What do you got for us?
Hey, Dan.
Hey, you kind of got me going when you were talking about Medicare and Medicaid expansion and whatnot. And yeah. One of the things I'd like to remind the listeners is simply this. When the federal government passes a budget bill like that, that money is allocated to a purpose. It's not like they say X dollars go to Wisconsin and Y goes to California and Z goes to Florida. So when Wisconsin turns down that money, the money still gets spent. It's just reallocated to other states.
Yeah, great point. As the Republicans would defend their decisions, Dan, well, we can't, you know, be part of this increasing the national deficit or the national debt. Well, and that's, of course, not the case, Dan, right?
Like when Scott Walker sent Correct. Back the high-speed rail money and thought he was going to get it back in highway
Same
funds.
Story.
Of course, we didn't. We got sued by Talgo.
Same story. Yep. And it happens repeatedly, and I'm tired of Republicans claiming they're fiscal conservatives. They're not. They just want to find ways not to spend money, even if it costs more.
It's not about not even spending money. It's not spending money associated with Democratic success. The fact that it was Obamacare and it was chastised and castigated, and anyone that would expand and grow the federal deficit. I mean, all these guys are morons. Because what they're doing is they're really expecting the poorest in their states to carry this debt load and carry the collections and carry the bills that they can never pay off in three lifetimes, because that's the American way. You know, some get lucky and some don't have health insurance, so they're screwed.
Yep.
Appreciate you. I don't know how I expected you to respond, but yep, seems to cover it.
Yep, that'll do. Thanks for the call, Dan. 844-967-2789. Catherine, you are next. Welcome, Catherine. What do you got for us?
Hey, Catherine.
Hi, guys. You guys talked on some topics that really bug me, and I just can't understand it. First of all, though, I'm so proud that you guys are statewide. Now let's go nationwide. We really need this across the country. But congratulations on that.
Well, thank you.
And it's fantastic. But what I wanted to say was, we've all heard about trickle down. You know, you give money to millionaires, supposed to come down to them. They don't realize that the real movement is the money goes up. And if they give poorer people even just a little bit of money, it changes everything and it improves the economy. I mean, look what happened with the COVID checks. We raised lots of children out of poverty with just those little, what were they, $1,200, $1,400 checks? You know, compared to what we're wasting on the military and so forth, that's nothing. And then we won't spend on health care on the front end, on prevention and care. For example, in Medicare, they won't care for, they won't cover all of your medical, all of your dental needs, which then cause other problems, which then you end up paying for the seniors being sick for other reasons. You know, if you just pay for general dental care, we just don't seem to get the economics of paying it forward on things that need to be covered.
Catherine, I'm not clear we don't get the economics. I think those Republicans and policymakers know full well who's getting paid on this, and that's the insurance companies. I mean, what do we have? A third of the people in this country are somehow in some way on government healthcare, right? The Obamacare, all the Army, the Navy, you know, all the federal workers and the state workers, hell, even the local politicians, right? We got lots and lots of people, Medicare, Medicaid, lots of people on federal health insurance. So what are those? Well, that's the older people. That's the poorer people, right? Maybe people in different risk categories. So what does that leave? We socialize the higher risk, right? Poor, older, we socialize their medicine. And what does that leave left over? Well, hell, that's the cream of the crop, the lower risk, more profitable population. Well, they go to the insurance companies, who get to, you know, do everything they can to raise their rates, take what they can, deny claims so they can make their money. I think they know exactly what they're doing, Catherine.
Well, I also think there's a certain dislike of people that haven't made it. And that they don't deserve anything then either, you know. Yeah. And I just don't see. I think there's like a punishment and a turn away, like, well, go ahead and get a job or something. You know, it just drives me crazy. And I think that's true with medicine, but in other things, if we, you know, raise the minimum wage, then the minimum wage, you know, the people that are making a lower income will buy more things, you know, and they stimulate the economy. I mean, things didn't fall apart when people got their COVID checks. It's just, it's so frustrating. It's very irritating. But and this whole thing about trickle down, they just keep doing that, just pouring more up to the top. It's getting ridiculous. It was bad years and years ago, and it's.
Catherine, I want to throw a thought out while there's still time in this segment, and I appreciate you listening. There was an article in the New York Times about a decade ago called "Jagged Little Pill," and what they did is they talked to people in reddening areas of the country, including northern Minnesota, where my in-laws lived at the time. And what they found is that as these rural areas became more dependent on the government, as the average working Joe found, be it NAFTA, be it whatever the case may be, that they could no longer you know, make a living, make a better wage than their old man did, give a better life to their kids, they resented the government. Those most in need of Medicaid expansion, those most in need of the social safety net, are the ones that resent the government because they aren't able to do it themselves. When Bernie Sanders talked about a rigged economy, this is what he meant. You can't make it. So many people, they didn't get a raise for 30 years. Life's not keeping up for them. And they resent the fact that they need quote-unquote welfare. That was supposed to be somebody else, not them. Come back. More Devils.
I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for those meddling Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Till 7 tonight, we're going to take your calls at 844-967-2789.
Dominic, last week on this big show, I made an assertion. Ron DeSantis, who now the darling of so many of these Republicans, at least according to Republicans I hear, well, I assert he's Scott Walker. He's the reincarnation of the failed presidential candidate, Scott
Walker.
And
do you then extrapolate that he will, what, sputter and fail after a couple months after he announces his campaign?
He's going to crash and burn under the heat and the weight of the buzzsaw that's running against Donald Trump. I predict a lot of pain for Ron DeSantis. Meatball Ron, as Trump now calls him. But, you know, it's interesting, and here's why I know I'm right, because there's an article at the NBC News, Scott Walker defending Ron DeSantis, saying effectively, Ron DeSantis is no Scott Walker.
Says Scott Walker. So is that a compliment or a rip?
Well, let's see, Dom. Some see comparisons between DeSantis and Walker. Crudy absolutely does. Scott Walker is Ron DeSantis in a bad suit with worse hair and a college dropout. Ron DeSantis, you know, checked the boxes that Scott Walker never did. Brown bagging it, driving the Saturn around Wisconsin. Anyways, here is how the NBC News Henry Gomez reports it. Jeff wants to know, Scott K. Walker or Scott P. Walker?
Scott P. It's hard to say.
Thanks. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is already attracting significant hype. Call it hype, Dom.
Hype!
In the 2024 presidential race, even though he hasn't yet jumped in. But there are also skeptics, call me skeptical, Dom, who see similarities with another young conservative governor who 8 years ago ran with lofty expectations, only to drop out months before the first primary.
Yeah,
the wanker! Boring. That doomed candidate, then Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, isn't buying the comparisons. In an interview Friday with NBC News, Wanker said the dynamics for DeSantis heading into 2024 are probably better than they were for him in the 2016 race. Well, because he doesn't suck as bad as you, but let me read why Wanker thinks that might be the case. DeSantis is in a good position, Wanker said, adding that he has a strong case to make against former President Donald Trump. Isn't that why he dropped out, though? Scott Walker was
literally gonna... that his when he dropped out, he said he was dropping out because God called him to drop out so he could clear the field for a more conservative candidate.
Basically, DeSantis' argument should be, if you want the same kind of toughness, if you want the same kind of pushback without the sharp edges, he's your guy.
Is that what we're calling an insurrection, an attack on the U.S. government?
Sharp edges.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, no one ever accused Scott Walker of being sharp, Tom.
Sharp, no.
Early polls showed DeSantis in a stronger position than Walker. I disagree with that. At this point, 8 years ago, and Trump, who romped through a historically large GOP field that year, shattering the presidential dreams of Walker, I assert, and Scott, you know it's true, still cries himself to sleep every night. Scott Walker, crushed on the rocks, Dom. shattering the presidential dreams of Walker and other more conventional Republicans on his way to the White House, is running again under much different circumstances, especially after losing in 2020. Here's a quote. "I wouldn't write him off, but he's not the new, completely different outsider that he was in 16 that all of us were not able to overcome." Walker, the president of the Young Nazi American Foundation, a national youth-oriented conservative group, said of Trump. Walker's comments come at the end of a busy week of presidential maneuvering by GOP prospects. Well, there's Quickie Nikki Haley, a former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations and South Carolina governor, officially launching her campaign, becoming the second declared candidate. And like Haley, former VP Mike Pence and Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, both of whom are weighing White House bids, visited early voting states. And DeSantis, you know, wanker's boy, continued to stoke speculation about his intentions as details surfaced about his plans to headline Republican functions outside of his own state and to address a Chicago area police union.
Wow.
Ron, you may not want to go to Chicago. I'm just saying.
A little off the path there, Ron. Maybe you should worry about Florida.
A little bit more, you know, connections, parallels between the wanker and DeSantis. DeSantis took office in Florida the year Wanker lost his bid, Walker, for a third straight term in Wisconsin. Wanker is closer with former governors who served at the time as he did, like Haley and Pence, than he is with DeSantis. He always loves the name drop. Scotty Wanker, that is. "I talked to Nikki the other day before she got in. She's going to have a credible case." No, she has no credible case. "She's going to have a credible case. Had a strong record as governor. I have yet to find a person who at least right of center objected to her as ambassador." Yeah, but that doesn't mean they're going to vote for her. Walker said he does not plan on endorsing in the GOP race.
Oh, there's bravery.
But will use his role at the foundation, Dom, to help connect presidential candidates with younger voters. How lucky for them both. Former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, another Republican believed to be preparing to run, addressed the organization this week on the day Haley officially launched her campaign. "It's going to be a wide open race," said Walker, who believes other sitting governors and senators will run. "8 years ago, there were already a bunch of people in or about to be at this point. Obviously, President Trump getting in, particularly as early as he did, kind of furrows things out for a while." Furrowed them out for a while, Dom.
Crudy, let me jump ahead
here,
a little bit. Like DeSantis is now with his tirades against woke culture and mainstream media, Walker, the Walker of 2015, was a star with the GOP base after tangling with public employee unions. A well-received speech at an Iowa candidates forum rocketed him to top-tier status.
We were there.
But like every other Republican who ran, Walker could not outrun Trump. He dropped out in September of 15. "People say I got out early. No, I just got out smart," Walker said Friday.
No, he got out in huge financial debt, Dom. I mean, when you run out of money, no one donating to your campaign. That's the reason you got out, you wanker.
"I could see after that second debate the absolute and total fascination by the media on Donald Trump, the candidate, and didn't see any way around that. I joke that I got out before I got a nickname from
Wanker
Trump," Walker added. "But seriously, we just could see where this was headed and decided it just didn't make any sense."
You know, there's more to this. This is the most relevant the Wanker has been in years, being compared to the next failed GOP presidential hopeful, Ron DeSantis. Meatball Ron.
I don't think, you know, come on, man. The four person at the Georgia Fulton County grand jury, well, she had something to say tonight, and that might throw some, I don't know, some sand in the Donald Trump gears. Folks, we are the Devil's Advocates. Come back with us extended hours for this primary, 844-967-2789. Wanker.